Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I really appreciate how fast we're growing, and I know it's because we have such wonderful quality guests. Today, we're going to be talking about Out of the Closet with Senior Romance. With the baby boomers hitting retirement, and I'm one of that generation, there's a lot in the news about staying young, changing the look of aging, grandparents who don't slow down, and more. What about seniors who still believe in romance? The baby boomers were the love-in generation, and for many of them, the optimism about romance has not faded, certainly not for me. Many stories have told of love in the mature years, but the baby boomers are bringing it to the fore, just because of our numbers, I think. Consider the success of the movie Something's Gotta Give with Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson, just a charming film. My guest this week is Tim Carroll, author of the new book Don't Ever Give Up on Love, which includes great stories of senior romance, including his own. Tim considers himself a senior romantic, which is just a wonderful moniker, and encourages others not to give up ever on finding your romantic partner. Tim will share some stories and also share his insights on how to date in the modern world and how seniors are using or not using social media, what to do about your past, and how to handle disbelieving adult children, and more. I'll tell you a little more about Tim before we start. Timothy Carroll was born in England and owned various private enterprises before joining the United Kingdom pensions industry, where I guess he got to know a few more seniors. He specialized in providing advice to British expatriates, eventually becoming one himself in Hong Kong, Spain, Belgium, and ultimately the United States. He and his wife, Yvonne, currently live in Atlanta, Georgia. Learning from his own experience, Tim was inspired to write his book, Don't Ever Give Up on Love, which has become an international bestseller. He found that expectations of romantic partners change as we age. If we start dating again, it's with a changed attitude. Don't Ever Give Up on Love contains real-life anecdotes, advice, and encouragement for anyone 50 and above who might want to date again. His roadmap also helps seniors to reevaluate their goals and recover after divorce, illness, bereavement, or financial challenges. Tim's goal is to provide hope, inspiration, and support to seniors ready to begin the next chapter in their romantic lives. So welcome to Family First, Tim.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you. It's an honor to be on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's start out just asking, how did you first get interested in researching this issue and writing your book?
Actually, it was my wife who prompted me. She said, you write so beautifully. I said, I only write emails. She said, yes, I know, but the way you write them, they're like little bits of a book. Why don't you write a book? And I said, well, I don't know what to write about. And she said, well, let's think about it. And one day she walked into my office and said, I've got it. Don't ever give up on love. I said, you want me to write about that? And she, said, yeah. She said, why not? She said, it's our story after all. And I thought, oh dear, this is about the last thing on earth I would have thought I'd have been tempted to write about myself. But anyway, a week or two went by, and she kept calling me and saying, or coming down and saying, have you written anything yet? Well, of course, I'm in the business, as you know already, with, you mentioned the British pensions business. So I was very busy with that, and I didn't really have time to write anything. And when she finally asked me the penultimate time, I thought I'd better get her off my back. So I wrote a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I suppose, to begin with. I wrote a little fairy tale describing roughly what had happened to us. But I used fairy tale terms like prince and princess, you know. Mm. And she loved it so much, she said, we have to find a literary agent. You've got to write about this. So I did quite a lot of research then, and after I got about three chapters written, an agent signed me up. So it was published, the whole book was published in March this year, and it became an international bestseller in June. So I have to say that although I started off with some trepidation, I began to enjoy it. I mean, the people's stories were so interesting to me, and they loved them so much when I'd written them. And I thought, this is right, a nice thing to be doing, really. I seem to be making people happy. And I went on with it, of course, until I completed the book. And now I'm working on a sequel.
Oh, a sequel. How wonderful. That's great. And obviously, it's wonderful to have a spouse that really encourages you to step out of your comfort zone and do something that's really been exciting for you. That's really a lovely story.
That's very good advice to anyone, really, to step out of your comfort zone. That's when life begins, really.
Yes, that's how we keep growing, for sure. So what was your personal experience with your wife? Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yes, it was one of those unusual things, really, because I wasn't really looking for anybody. I didn't think she was either. She was widowed probably 2 or 3 years before. And I had moved from one town to another. I had moved from Tampa in Florida to Atlanta. I thought I'd like a change of scenery and new clientele. So I had moved up here, I suppose, about 6 months before I met her. And I was just joining everything where I might pick up business leads, really. I was looking for business. I thought, well, if I talk to enough Americans, they must know a few Brits that I could talk to and offer my services. So I joined a lot of things. And I was sitting at a bar one day in a little place in Alpharetta near Atlanta. And somebody I already knew, a lady called Barbara, said, oh, you'd like to meet this guy. He knows everybody in town. So Dean sat up at the bar beside me, and we chatted for quite a while. And then he said, you know, I think you'd like a group I belong to. To meet once a week, and it's a singles group. He said, I don't want to put you off or anything, but he said, they're very nice people, and I belong to it. Why don't you come down as my guest? So I said, well, give me your email, and I'll make a date with you in a couple of weeks. And when I did arrive there eventually, he wasn't there. He was playing golf, I think. But they were so welcoming. And you know, I think the secret of this club was that the women were all very good friends, and they made a very warm core to it, and that attracted the men and kept the men there. And I thought, this is a nice group of people, and that's where I met my wife. Although nothing happened, I suppose, for a couple of months, we began dating in January, we were engaged in March, and married by October.
Oh, that's lovely.
It was just right. You know, I think I have to say to people, it's a magical thing almost. I mean, every time you go out, you're not going to meet the love of your life, but somewhere out there, there's somebody suitable for everyone. And I just think you know that moment when you meet that person. It's like a chemical thing. You think, oh, I've never felt like this before, and you can't stop yourself pursuing the idea.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to take a moment and tell you my mother's story, because my parents couldn't possibly have been more in love. And my dad passed away when he was 59.
Oh.
And she really didn't want to be alone, but she looked up some old friends. And she went to an antiques club party, which was attended by women. But they had a Valentine's party, and they all invited a guy. And so she didn't have anybody to invite, but this one fellow kind of left the older woman who had just brought him as a friend and started following her around. And to make a long story short, they spent 22 wonderful years together before she passed away.
Yes, that's the kind of story I hear so often, because I'm, I suppose, now looking for stories. Everyone has one. Almost everybody you meet, if it's not about them, it's about somebody they know, or it might be a relation. I mean, a lot of young people like my book because they can give it away to older single relations who, aunts and uncles and people like this, or friends of the family. They think, oh, that would suit my mother's friend or somebody that they know. And so it's got a fairly broad appeal. It's not just the single people over 50 who are likely readers of this book. It's people who care about them, too.
Oh, that's such a great point, because books can really change lives. So tell me, Tim, what are some of the concerns that you run into that make the seniors hesitant to get into the field again?
It's no different at any time in life, I suppose, but there's always the question of trust. Who can I trust? Who will not let me down? These are the main fears, I think, that people enter the dating world with, wondering if they're going to get taken for a ride or have all their money stolen, or, you know, there are so many different threats that people fear. I think you have to face these things. It's the same old story in life. You have to face your fears to overcome them. And if you go out feeling that you will trust everybody until you can't, then you're likely to trust a lot of people. And your trust will be returned by most of them. And I'm just saying, have the confidence to trust. Because if you're trusting, you'll get it back. You'll get trust back.
That's a really powerful approach to the situation.
Well, I have
if you go fearful, you're more likely to attract people who recognize the victim attitude.
You could do. I mean, but you could always be on your guard about that, but not too much. I think you have to be yourself and be as open as possible. If you're not that kind of person, then you're probably not going to meet so many people who will trust you, but it's we're all unique. We all have different attitudes, all have different attributes and different points of attraction. So I'm just saying that although this is a concern that people have, it's something you can overcome, and that on the whole, people are good-hearted and mean well, and we all have to pursue our selfish goal, of course, but it doesn't stop people helping each other when they can. We are based on a gregarious species, and we thrive on community, on communities of people. So none of us are alone, really. We don't have to be.
That's great to hold out that kind of positive attitude and hope. How did your experiences living in so many different parts of the world inform your positive point of view, Tim?
It's funny. It tends to confirm a suspicion I think I had already, that we're all really much the same under the skin. You know, some people have different facial features or different colored skins, and they're different stature. And conventions are slightly different from one place to another. But I think most people have the same desires and needs and fears. And it doesn't change very much. I have noticed, though, that the Asian communities tend to have a smaller personal space. In other words, you know, it's harder to get in someone's face over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Caucasians tend to have a slightly bigger perception of their personal space. And so they're invaded, perhaps, if somebody moves in within about 5 feet of you. But in the Asian sense, it's a much smaller space around you that's really personal. So they can get up close to each other and feel very comfortable about it.
Oh, isn't that interesting? I think it's partly because they're used to being more crowded.
Well, that's true. You know, I mean, when I lived in Hong Kong, often apartments there were occupied by 10 people. I remember a friend of mine who had quite a nice apartment on the southern side of Hong Kong Island, and he had somebody over there, one of the local Chinese people. He said, "Oh, you have so much space here. You could have more people." He said, "But no, I want to be on my own." He was a German guy, and he had a sense of Caucasian space.
Yes.
And he said, "But you have so much room. You could rent all this room out." And, of course, it was not my friend's concept at all, but it was an impression that remained with me. I thought, yes, they don't mind. Although I think of a thriving trade done with hotels in Hong Kong, that put up couples who want to get away from the multiple people in their apartment just for a night.
Oh, interesting. So well, we're up on a break honeymoon. Now, Tim. But let's go on with that subject. We're talking to Tim about senior romance and finding love in the mature years.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking with Tim Carroll today, and he is the author of Don't Ever Give Up on Love. And he's collected wonderful stories about seniors who've rediscovered romance and love in their lives. And he's lived all over the world, and we were just talking about possible differences between attitudes in different areas. And, Tim, I was wondering if you'd noticed any different attitude among seniors towards romance between the United States and, say, Canada or Europe?
Well, I'm not very familiar with Canada, but I know in Europe there's an openness, I suppose, particularly towards sexual encounters, which is a little different in America. I think I've always thought that Americans were quite blasé, but in fact they're fairly conservative, fairly prudish in some ways compared
yes.
with Europeans, not compared with the Asians. The Asians tend to be fairly correct about things too. You know, they have very strong conventions about when you should meet, when you should talk, when you should kiss, and all that sort of thing. And I think it's a little bit more open and freewheeling in Europe, I would say. But it comes down to the same thing in the end. You know, if you're hit on, you don't want to be hit on, you've got to find some way of getting out of it.
Yes, I remember as a child thinking that mature European women seem to have more confidence than senior women in the United States. And I think it's partly because of that. There's sort of more of an openness about continuing their sexuality.
It's a smaller place, too. I mean, the countries are smaller. They're all individual with different attitudes and languages, different cultural attitudes, too. America is a very large place with small communities in it. Well, that's a large population. Individual conurbations are quite small. So I think it's rather like in a little village in some ways. Everyone knows it, everyone else, and I suppose you tend to live within those confines. Many people do, and they've been brought up that way, especially in the senior communities. They're not as well traveled, perhaps, as you are, Randy, but there's a little bit more reticence about how to behave and how far to let things go and how fast. But that's my only observation. I found Americans are charming people, and the women are delightful. They really are. Very, very welcoming and charming. They really are. I've made so many friends here through socializing, I suppose, with my wife. And they're just wonderful people. There's this great attitude. And I noticed the first time I set foot in America, I'd flown over from Belgium, where I was living, but I came out here on business initially, and everybody was so talkative and pleasant. I mean, I was amazed at the hospitality shown to me by perfect strangers. And when I was searching for my first night in a hotel in America, I'd driven in from Orlando to Tampa, where I was living, and I was trying to find this hotel. I drove down, and it got dark, and I thought, I think I've gone past it. So I stopped by one of these fast food places, and I hopped inside, and there was a long line waiting to be served. I said, sorry, I don't want to interrupt. Can you just tell me where this hotel is? And the guy behind the counter left the queue, came right outside with me, took me down to the road, and he pointed. He said, you see that sign up there? Well, the sign behind it is the one you're looking for, but you can't see it very well because it's green. I said, but what about your customers? Oh, that doesn't matter, he said. I said, well, very kind of you. I was amazed that he would even take the trouble to come out to somebody who wasn't even a customer and tell me how to get there. It was delightful.
Oh, that's a delightful story.
So tell me. Say, people in America are like that. They're very spontaneously helpful. And I know there are all sorts of bad things going on too, but they happen everywhere. But generally, the nature of Americans is very open and helpful.
Oh, that's good to hear. So how do you describe the difference between the dating scene today and what, say, someone who's 55 years old now when they were dating, say, 30 years ago?
Yes, conventions have changed a lot. And, of course, the means of dating have changed a lot, too. You know, now we've got the Internet and social media, and this has made a big difference. I think probably more dating in the senior group is done on the Internet than by any other means. And this is an amazing change, and it's happened really quite quickly. But now the seniors are texting each other. And in fact, there's a group in California, I think, who set up themselves a little self-teaching group so that they could learn how to text, because nobody knew. Nobody knew how. And I'm involved with a company here that's trying to do much the same thing. They're trying to give out some free advice on how to text for seniors, because it's the modern way of getting in touch with people and keeping in touch. So it's not just social media, it's texting as well. And all these things make quite a difference to the dating scene. I mean, at one time, you met people through friends or in a grocery store or in the drugstore or the local diner. You know, there weren't that many opportunities, maybe through the church group. But with the Internet and with singles clubs and all kinds of dating agencies, online dating agencies, I mean, there's so many other opportunities now for people who don't necessarily want to rush around bars and restaurants looking for people to meet. You don't have to do that. And somebody who's quite busy otherwise might find it easier to make contacts on the Internet. I'm not pushing it as the only way. I mean, obviously, people meet through all kinds of different sources. In fact, in the book, I wrote about a couple who met through a bereavement group, and it's the last place you think that romance would spring. Mm. People have just lost the nearest and dearest in their lives at a time in life when they were looking forward to spending many, many more years together of quality time. The children all left home. They all got jobs and they've been finished with college and all that. So now they had the money and the time to devote to each other, and guess what? They lost their spouses to illness, and it was a devastating blow. I mean, there was no question of filling the gap with anybody else in their minds, but, as I said earlier, you know, when you recognize that spark, that special chemical connection or whatever it is, you can't ignore it. And what happened was that this group had been through several sessions together, about 10 of them, and the counselor was a very, very useful person. It took them through the grieving process and the anger and the resentment and all the various phases that face grievers, and really only a griever knows what's involved, and it varies from one to another. But after this finished, a member of the group said, well, it's Christmas coming up. Why doesn't everybody come round to my place? We'll have a party. And at the party, the lady I wrote about was relating to another person in the group that she'd accidentally driven right through her garage and out the other side, smashing it to pieces. Quite by accident, she just trod on the wrong pedal. But she said, I sometimes think maybe I did it intentionally because I couldn't face going on my own any longer. So I'm so, you know, at a loss.
Yes.
And the fellow that she fell in love with said, I never want to hear you say that again. You're far too valuable a friend. And do, please, take care. Take a hold of yourself. I mean, if necessary, email me if you feel like that. And so they do start emailing each other. And he used to take a walk in the morning and just for exercise. And it happened to cross her route to work. And, sorry, you say route, don't you?
Either way. I say
so, route. He got in the habit of picking up some donut holes for her to take to work. As they cross, their paths cross, he was in his shorts, and she'd pull up, and he'd say, hey, what? And she'd drive off. And they used to have a lot of fun doing this, and they met for coffee. But gradually, this acquaintance turned into romance. And they felt like teenagers again. She said, it's so incredible. It's the last thing you'd expect. And they were so judgmental of anybody else prior to this who they'd heard had taken up a romantic relationship with anyone within a short time, even 2 years of losing their spouse. And when it happened to them, they thought, oh, how wrong we were. When it happens to you, you can't help it happening.
Well, that's a beautiful story.
There's a saying, you know, Randy, that it's not a matter of marrying or settling down with somebody you can live with. It's settling down with somebody you can't live without.
Oh, I love that. That makes so much sense to the heart. So how do you find that seniors do adjust to this change? Like you said, there are courses they can take to learn how to explore the social media, find affinity groups or groups where they feel comfortable or texting each other.
Yes, sorry, I didn't interrupt you, Brandy.
So do they tend to embrace it, or do they need to have it be nudged along?
It's better if you can do something with a group of people, because it's like a class, then one encourages the other. Not many people want to sit down and do this all by themselves, but if you buy any equipment these days, usually the company that manufacture the product, if it's an iPad or a notebook or a laptop or whatever it is, or an iPhone, they will give you a course as part of their, I mean, you have to pay for it, but they'll give you as part of their upsell or additional service, they will give you a course on how to use it to the maximum. And it's very useful. People have done this, have said it's very, very helpful because it expands their use of it so much more than just muddling through. And not many people like reading manuals anyway. It's usually the thing of last resort, isn't it?
Yes.
But I was on a cruise recently going around Italy from Spain, and there's a little room I kept walking past full of people. And apparently it was Microsoft lecturing on how to use Windows. And I couldn't believe how many people wanted to know. They were all sitting in there picking up information they hadn't got. And I think there are a lot of opportunities for people to learn more about social media and about the hardware that you need to explore it.
That's neat, and you might actually meet somebody there as well.
Well, that's another thing. You know, the more activities that you can engage in which are useful to you, the more likely you are to meet somebody with a similar mindset or a similar problem. It's a matter, I think, when you said how can they adjust, I think those who are open to personal growth should continue growing and continue adjusting.
Oh, that's great. Well, on that note, we're going to take another break, Tim, but we'll be right back to talk more about the healthy attitudes that the seniors need to cultivate.
Which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
The Total Education Network is the only network that airs shows 7 days a week on various stations. Please go to our website, www.totaltutor.org, for more information about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide educational news and tips for parents. The Total Education Network, the talk shop for parents, teachers, and administrators. That's www.totaltutor.org.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking about senior romance, coming out of the closet with the baby boomer generation. And we're talking with Tim Carroll, who's the author of the international bestseller, Don't Ever Give Up on Love. And he's shared some wonderful stories about seniors discovering a new way of dating through social media and texting each other and finding each other. And I wanted to ask you, Tim, about to expand a little more on those healthy attitudes that you encourage seniors to develop, the openness, the learning to trust when they've lost someone they loved, and so on. What are the healthiest attitudes you're looking to encourage?
I think you need to follow your interests. Keep growing mentally and keep active physically. I think this keeps you healthier, and it informs you with other people, other groups of people. So I say, when no man is an island, and it's a good thing to make friends and develop. You can develop a network. It might be for any purpose, but romance tends to spring from meeting somebody quite spontaneously sometimes in a place you might not even expect. But you have to be out there. You've got to be out there before this is going to happen. And it's difficult for some people to make that decision to step out. And it's not like marketing yourself, really. It's just participating in activities you enjoy. And then you'll meet people who also enjoy them. Now, it might be painting. It might be learning to play bridge. It might be any kind of activity like that. It might be just theater outings or going to museums. It could be golf. I mean, there are various sporting organizations like the American Singles Golf Association, where people really just go to play golf, but because they're single, they're available. And so romances spring up from this proximity. And I'm just saying to people, go out there, do something you like, and expand your interests.
That makes so much sense, especially if they're not looking and they're just doing something they like, they will be more attractive. You know, they'll be happy and open and enjoying themselves.
You grow and enjoy, and apart from anything, you'll have fun and you'll make friends. And not every friend's going to be a lover, but you'll certainly make new friends. And your circle of influence will grow. And other people may say, that was a very nice person. I'd like them to meet somebody I knew. You never know, they might get on. You know, people like to matchmake a little bit. All sorts of things can happen. You just never know. And I'm just saying it won't happen if you stay at home.
Right, right. So, what are some tips to attracting a partner that you'll really enjoy with, and you'll get that spark? Because you hear you can't go on and on and on about your previous lost love. What are some of the tips? Doing something you love. You've just said. There other things?
If you like to learn a new dance, if you like to learn to dance, full stop. I mean, if you like to learn to dance. Period. But if you already know how to dance something, you might learn a new step or a new kind of dance. I mean, the latest craze is celebrity dancing, dancing with the stars and so on. There's a lot of interest in dancing. And it's one of those activities that's good exercise. It's fun. You dress up for it, and it brings men and women together, doing it together as a team. And so I think it's a wonderful thing for people who like dancing. Not everybody does, but those who do should participate in it and enjoy it. And you'll meet all kinds of dancing partners, not necessarily a lifelong romantic partner, but you'll meet people that you will have as friends. And who knows where this can lead. I'm just saying, give it a try.
Yes, I remember my mother did take dance lessons a year or two after my father died, and my husband and I have found ballroom dancing a wonderful place to meet other couples that are enjoying each other and having fun, so that's a great suggestion. Do you draw wisdom from couples who have been lucky enough to maintain a long-term marriage and worked at it? Like myself and my husband, we've been married.
Yes, this is something I wanted to bring into a future book, actually, because I've met people like you who've been married for 50 years and still as happy as ever as when they first met. And it's almost like a teenage romance still going on. And I would like to do some examples of that. I've tended to concentrate in my first book on people who are on the second time or third time around and had pretty well given up on life, ever expanding again for them in this direction. And so I've used their stories to encourage people who've got into that confusing crossroads where one sort of life has ended and now what's next and what should they do about it. And so I'm trying with the first book to help those people take some guidance from it. I'm not really equipped to advise them, but I'm just saying that I'm repeating the experience of others in the hope that it will help somebody who hasn't taken that step yet. But as far as the long-term relationship is concerned, even after 50 years, in some cases, I've just written a story actually for the sequel about a couple who were both married for, I think one was 48 years to the same partner, and the other was 50 years, and the partners died, unfortunately. And there they were in their mid-70s, and they met at the American Legion. And they liked each other so much when they had a chance to dance with each other and other people that he invited her out on a cruise. And that was where the romance really became intense, and he proposed in front of a witness. and these people are now over 80 and still thoroughly enjoying each other, and they're there for keeps, there's no doubt about it. And it's a lovely story of somebody, you would never think that somebody who'd been with another that they loved dearly for so long, that you'd think, well, that's it, yes, I don't want to spoil things by starting all over again. But when it happens, when it's in front of you and you're aware of it, then you can't deny it. You have to go with the flow. And that's what they did. And it's a lovely story. I'm looking forward to including it in this book that once it's completed, maybe next year. But these things take a little time. I can't just sit down and be inspired. You know, I have to write down everything that somebody tells me and then take it back to them and say, is this right? Is that right? And they say, oh, no, it's a different date. So you change the chronological order and just edit it slightly and revise it according to their wishes. And then it becomes set in stone and it goes in the book. But so it's slightly different from writing a novel where I would have to invent everything. I'm not inventing anything here. I'm just repeating what people are telling me. The true life, you know, they say fact is stranger than fiction.
Yes, and, I totally agree with you. I've seen it over and over. Now, how do you advise that, well, you say don't advise, how do you find people deal with illness and disability, or if they're afraid of becoming a burden as they age because they have disabilities?
Well, the burden is going to be there anyway at some stage, because nobody lasts forever, unfortunately. The main thing is you are the most important thing, with or without the burden. And it's your personality and your love and feelings that are the most important thing. The burden is something extra that you know, one has to handle. And a number of people that I've written about have got those burdens in their relationship. But they're just dealing with them like everybody has to. I mean, when you're... One man actually said, I don't think I really want to ever get married to the lovely lady I'm in love with, because I didn't want to be a burden to her. But they were together anyway. So
yes,
she was not going to ditch him just because he became infirm in some way. And finally, it was a nice story, actually. It's in the book. But what happened was that when he got to his 85th birthday, she said, I'd like to give him a present. I don't know what to give him. And then she had the idea that a little dog would be an attractive thing for him. And my wife was someone who helped to find the dog in the first place and looked after it until the day. Then she presented it on his 85th birthday, and he said, what on earth? What are you giving me this for? He said, my age? He said, we're too old to have a pet. And he said, who's going to feed it? I'm going to tread on it. And anyway, there was a little bit of anxiety about it to begin with. But after a week or so, the dog had fallen in love with him. And he was in love with the dog. And I suppose a couple of weeks later, he was sitting up in bed with the dog between them, was sleeping with them. And he looked over at her and he said, you know, we're a family now. We should get married.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
And they had a wonderful wedding. They had a really slap-up wedding. It was beautifully done. All their friends turned out. There were 200 people there. And this was somebody who felt he was a burden. He might be a burden. But she thinks he's the sun shines out of his eyes. I mean, he's just everything to her. And she is to him, too. And the dog.
Yes. Oh, that's a wonderful story of how... to overcome that fear, and she took the initiative to just do something she felt moved to do, and that moved them forward. And
yeah,
you never know, as long as you're growing, things can shift. That's lovely. So were you at the wedding then?
Yes, I was in the wedding party, actually. It was very nicely done. She said, I want everybody to wear costume. So the women dressed up in antebellum dresses.
Oh.
And, I went as an English barrister. I had a little skit that I was going to do to humor them, you know. So we've made quite an unusual bunch. But it went down extremely well. It's held at a local club here, the Georgian Club. And it was a wonderful show. I mean, it really was like a performance.
Yes. We're up on another break now, so I want to come back and ask about adult children and their reactions.
Fine, yes. I look forward to that, Randy.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking with Tim Carroll, who's the author of the international bestseller, Don't Ever Give Up on Love. And it's stories of seniors who are finding love maybe the second or third time around in their lives, and sometimes even the first, and how they deal with the new dating patterns. And what I wanted to ask Tim is, I've heard of adult children being appalled at their parents' new romance and being concerned. I've even heard of a gentleman who lost his wife to a long illness and was actually making moves at the funeral. So we don't want that to happen. But what can a parent say to a child who is just stunned that their parent is trying a second time?
Yes, this can happen at almost any time in the life of the parent and the child. And so it may not be within a short time of losing a spouse that you, it may be some time, maybe years and years afterwards, but the children can still react and think, well, this is spoiling my image of my parents. My deceased parents should be honored, and they feel a little indignant, perhaps, and maybe they feel they're losing out a little bit on attention and so on, and affection. But the parent really has helped that child to set them on their path in life. And I think it's worth telling the child at that time, well, you know, I've helped you to find your path. Let me follow mine. This is what I have to do. You have your own life now. And this is the life I will. I'm not going to stop loving you or seeing you and all that sort of thing, but I have a right to follow my path. And if romance is on that path, I have a right to that too.
That fits so much with what you're saying, that it can happen to have the romantic spark again, and you can't ignore it, and the parent has a right to have their life go on. But it sounds very important to affirm for the child that they are still your beloved child, and
yes,
you don't want that relationship to suffer.
I mentioned a lady and a gentleman just in the last segment who decided to get married when they got a little dog. Well, when that relationship first began, the daughter was actually living with the mother. And they had a very good menage, really, because the daughter was a very good cook, and she would cook the meals, and the mother would clear up, and it all worked very smoothly. But then the man came into the mother's life, and she decided she was in love with him, he was in love with her, and she invited him to come and live with her. Well, that's when it didn't go down too well with the daughter. And there came a time when the daughter said, look, I can't stand him. I don't think you're doing the right thing at all. And it's either him or me. So the mother said, well, look, I love you, and I always will, but he's going to stay in my life, whatever you say. And so the daughter left. And they're all right now. I mean, they got back together again, of course, but the daughter got her own place. And although there's still tension, it's much more workable as a relationship between the three of them. And the daughter has her own relationship too, you know, so that's probably filled a gap in her life.
Yes, I encourage people to believe that, you know, time will heal, even if there's a real falling out. And apparently, cosmically, it was time for them all to take a step forward.
Yes, I think they were just you know, paddling their own canoes to some extent. And I think there comes a time when you've just got to compromise a little bit for the sake of peace and harmony and the love for each other, really. I have a saying that love powers life. And I think it powers just about everything, really. So it's a question of giving love a chance, really, in your own life as well as in that of other people that you care about.
Yeah, my very first book was called You Can Postpone Anything But Love. And I love that power. Love powers life. That's so true.
It's a nice title. I like it. Yes.
Thank you. We just have a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you recommend for financial arrangements when the couples have families that will inherit from them, or there might be a disparity in their retirement income, or they may both be in trouble? Do you have recommend prenuptial agreements or separate accounts or
I think it's whatever the individuals really feel is important. Obviously, if you care for somebody very much, you may say, well, I want them to have everything. They're the most important in my life now. But if you've brought up a family and they've got children, so you've got grandchildren involved as well, you may not want to devote everything to you, the new love in your life. You may say, well, would it be reasonable to compromise on this? I mean, I myself signed a prenup agreement with my wife at the time we decided to get married because her children were very upset about me coming on the scene.
Mm.
And it wasn't me as a person, it was the fact of me, the fact that there was someone else there. I think they were protective towards her and felt that perhaps she might be making a mistake and I was an unknown quantity, a foreigner. There was a rumor going around the family that I was an ex-murderer and bigamist, and nobody knew about it. I thought, how did they find that out? But, all sorts of scary things crop up in the minds of children, often because they feel protective towards a parent, but sometimes because they feel that they're being edged out or deprived in some way. And it's up to the parent to make the decision. It's their money, and it's up to them to apportion it in the way that is fairest for them and in their mind.
And
but they're the ones
so
who have to decide. The children can't decide it. They shouldn't decide it.
Right. And the important point, too, though, is for the couple to discuss these issues.
Yes.
Before
they get... I mean, some people like to keep their own homes and just have a romance where they meet and stay at one house or the other, but they don't sell anything. Sometimes it's a big upheaval in a later life to have to get rid of all the things you've collected. You have basements full of stuff. And what are you going to do with it all? You know, there's so much stuff sitting around that you've collected or that you've inherited. And when you bring two people like that together, it's like it's more daunting than any yard sale, isn't it?
You want yes,
to
for sure.
To do with it all. Where's it all going to go? You know, where will it fit? Where will it look good? And when you're trying to condense two homes into one, and you both treasure these heirlooms and items of value, it's a difficult thing to sort out. I mean, you just have to compromise and be loving about it.
Yes. Well, we just have a couple more minutes, so I want to make sure people know how they can get your book, Tim.
You.
Don't Ever Give Up on Love, Tim Carroll. And your website is wonderful, and how they might engage you to speak if they have a group that would love to hear about seeing your love.
I'd be delighted, yes. I hope I can throw some light on the matter. But the book is on the website of its own title, actually, www.don'teverGiveUpOnLove.com. That's all one word, no abbreviation. You can buy it online at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and many online stores stock it. I'm doing a signing at Barnes & Noble, actually, tomorrow in Atlanta. And you can call me, if you'd like to have me speak somewhere, at 770-391-0181.
Great. Very good. And I really appreciate you sharing these wonderful suggestions of how seniors can get back out there and not ever give up on love, that we are social people and we want to be with people who love us.
Nothing better than sharing the life ahead with somebody you really care about. I think the thing I missed most when I was single was waking up on the pillow of the woman I loved.
And, oh, that's beautiful.
And really, I think I can't rate it high enough. It's a wonderful thing. And everybody should try and make the best of their lives by finding that special someone.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm glad your wife, Yvonne, encouraged you to write this wonderful book. And we'll look forward to the next one.
Thank you so much, Randy. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolf, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.